And welcome back. The blending of history and fiction can be a tricky business, but author Ruta Sepetys knows how to do it. Even history has its surprises. If you've never heard of the ship Wilhelm Gustloff, you're not alone, but three times as many people died on this vessel than lost their lives on the Titanic and Lusitania combined. Almost all were refugees, and among more than 25,000 who died at sea, fleeing their homelands and World War II's final weeks and months. The flight of refugees provides Sepetys' storyline, and when I spoke with her earlier this week, we acknowledged that the plight of refugees today is much like it was in the 40s.
Well, the connection I see, sadly, is that of the children. And that's something I was actually thinking of when I wrote Salt to the Sea. What about these innocent children who are victims of vengeful regime and, you know, are left with an inheritance of heartache and responsibility and tragedy for something that they had no role in causing? So the common thread that I see is the children.
Things really haven't changed very much, have they? I mean, the people are different, the place is different, but the agony of that life and that predicament is very much the same.
It is the same. And I even see, you know, the same narrative of these refugees. Where do I come from? Where am I going? And do I have the power to persevere?
You have a family connection to that story as well.
I do. My father fled from Lithuania when the Soviets occupied, and my father spent 9 years in refugee camps before being able to come to the United States. So there's a definite connection, and the narrative of the refugee is something that's always really resonated with me because of my father.
Is part of his story part of your story in the book? Did you draw from his experiences?
I did. The main character in the book, Joanna, you know, she has fled from Lithuania. And when she fled, she initially didn't realize that, you know, many of her extended family members were arrested and deported to Siberia. And that was my father's storyline. When he fled as a child, he didn't realize that some of their extended family members had been deported.
I want to set the stage with regard to what was going on, where, and when. Let's do that now and then get back to some of those characters because they're certainly worth talking about.
Sure. Salt to the Sea begins in winter of 1945, and the end of World War II is nearing. And at this point, the Germans, they know that things are not looking good, but they won't admit it. You know, the Germans are in this region of East Prussia, and pushing in from the east are the Russians. And caught between the Germans and the Russians are millions of refugees. And so the Germans staged a large naval evacuation called Operation Hannibal, and they were going to escape over water. And one of the ships that they commandeered for the evacuation was a German cruise ship called the Wilhelm Gustloff.
And that's that was the destination for your four characters, obviously.
Correct. I have four characters, a young Lithuanian nurse, a Polish girl, an East Prussian art thief, and a German sailor. And their fates converge as they make their way to the port to board this doomed ship.
We've already spoken about Joanna. Let's talk about Florian now and his role in your story.
Yes. In addition to evacuating, you know, civilians and, of course, you know, Nazi party officials, the Germans had plundered some art during World War II, and they certainly weren't going to leave without that. So part of the art, the art was part of this evacuation, and it was rumored that the treasure of the Amber Room was perhaps loaded onto the Gustloff in 26 belted crates. And so through the character of Florian, who is an East Prussian restoration artist, I have woven in this thread of the Amber Room.
You know, most people probably are not familiar with the Amber Room. Tell us what the Amber Room was.
The Amber Room was a glittering chamber of amber and gold and jewels. And during World War II, it was stolen from the Russians by the Nazis. And the Amber Room was last seen in December of 1944. And parts of the Amber Room, pieces, have allegedly been found. But where is the Amber Room? You know, once called the eighth wonder of the world, it simply disappeared.
You obviously have taken history and woven it into your story. Let's talk a little bit about and then we'll come back to the characters. Let's talk a little bit about the way to do that, the challenges that that poses for a writer such as yourself to weave historical fact and fiction together.
Weaving fact and fiction does present challenges. I tell people that I write the books, but they're not my stories. History writes the story. And so I'll start with a historical thread, and then I try to find survivors, people who experience that time period and can give me their testimony or share their memoirs. And so then I'll wrap fictional characters around that testimony, and weave them together. And in the case of Salt to the Sea, although the Wilhelm Gustloff was a German ship, there were Lithuanians, Latvians, Estonians, and some Croatians on board. There were many different cultures represented. And because we all view history and story through our own cultural lens, I wanted to represent those lenses. So that's why I've created four characters, all from different regions.
The thing that I found, among the things I found very interesting about your book, what I found most interesting is the format, the fact that you use these four characters and they each tell the same story from their own perspective. That is not a style one sees every day.
Thank you. I tell the story in alternating chapters. So we have these four characters, but each chapter, we're hearing from a different character. And as a writer, it was a challenge because I had to make sure that each character's voice was distinct, in hopes that as the reader is reading through the book, that the voice will be so strong that they'll recognize the character, even if the character's name isn't, at the chapter head. And I think I bit off more than I could chew, and it took me quite a while to pull it all together.
Well, the characters are very nicely drawn. We've already talked about Joanna and Florian. Let's talk about Emilia now, who plays a central role in this. Obviously, when we're talking about a novel, it's very, very difficult to do so without spoilers. I'm trying, and I know you would like to try too, to avoid telling the fate of any of these characters. So let's try to avoid that as we talk about Emilia and then later Alfred.
Sure. Emilia, I was hoping to represent the complexity of the Polish narrative. Many of the Polish people, when I spoke to them, they said, Ruta, Poland is so misunderstood and the world doesn't understand, our sacrifice or our struggle. And so through the character of Emilia, I wanted to portray and represent that. Emilia represents Poland.
She does indeed. One clearly sees the distaste in which the Poles were held, certainly by the Germans, through your novel. They were subhuman.
Yes, and in some of Emilia's dialogue, she's expressing that Poles are considered, subhuman, and that the schools were closed and the desks and school books from the Polish children, were sent to other countries, and that Polish children, it was determined they only needed to count to 10 and literacy wasn't important. And that was so painful. Those accounts were so painful for me to read in my research.
The other character, the main character, I should say, is Alfred, of course. In some ways, he was my favorite character because he was so easy to despise.
me too. Thank you. Yeah, Alfred is a German sailor, and he becomes our eyes and ears onto this ship, onto the Wilhelm Gustloff. But through the character of Alfred, I wanted to explore what happens to a young person who is completely invisible and rejected often, and then what happens when they're given a uniform and suddenly become visible, and even if that is in his own mind. And to create the character of Alfred, again, without any spoilers, I did study young Hitler quite a bit, and you might see some parallels there.
I think so. That's pretty clear. You know, obviously, the great villain in the story and of the time was Germany and the Nazis, but also villainous in its own way, and it's quite clear in your book, are the Russians. Their role in your book, villain, I guess, is a kind word for them.
Yes, definitely. And this was, obviously a complex time period. And, you know, I have a character in the novel, the shoe poet. And at one point he says, you know, Stalin, Hitler, there is no happy ending here. And imagine if your choice is Stalin or Hitler. I mean, you know, this was a very complex time period. And, of course, being the daughter of a Lithuanian refugee and feeling very much identifying with the country of Lithuania, who was occupied by the Soviet Union for 50 years, I want to share this history. I want people to look at all sides of the war and also then to realize that the United States, we were allied with the Soviets in our fight against Hitler.
And we should point out that the characters in the book were not fleeing the Nazis so much as fleeing the Russians.
Correct.
And the consequences were paid for that because the Russians were very interested in slowing down this band of refugees.
They were. And caught between, you know, the Germans and the Russians were millions of refugees. And, you know, really at the end of the war, it was suffering that emerged the victor. And so many, you know, people, especially the children, were these innocent victims.
You know, I lived in Germany for 6 years and have some familiarity with the events of World War II. But I have to say that one of the great gaps in my knowledge of that time was the Wilhelm Gustloff. I'd never heard of this ship, and yet I pointed out in some promotional material that three times as many people were killed aboard this vessel as were on the Lusitania or Titanic combined.
Correct. The death toll of the Wilhelm Gustloff is far greater than the Titanic and Lusitania combined, yet much of the world has never heard of it. And when I was doing research in Germany, I met with one German historian. I mean, this was a German historian, and he himself had never heard of it. And then about the Gustloff, and when we were discussing it, you know, why is it? Why is it that the world doesn't know about the Wilhelm Gustloff? And we came up with you know, a couple of possible answers. Number one, the Germans have said that those who know about the Wilhelm Gustloff, that they feel it's inappropriate to position themselves as victims in any way during World War II, considering the atrocities that they committed. And then also on the Russian side, the submarine commander, Marinesco, that torpedoed the Gustloff, he was shortly thereafter dishonorably discharged and sent to Siberia himself. So perhaps the Russians weren't talking about it. In later years, Marinesco was, he was restored. His reputation was restored and he became somewhat of a hero. So perhaps, you know, between those, you know, the Germans not speaking of it. And of course, then let's not forget when the ship sank during the war, Hitler did try to conceal the story. It's documented that he was concerned that if people knew that some of these large refugee ships sank, that it would really affect morale. And, you know, so they weren't speaking of it.
That segment of the book is, I think, the best, too. It's very, very well drawn. It's difficult not to be drawn into that time and that place and the experience these people were going through. Congratulations on that. That was very, very nicely done, I thought.
Thank you so much.
How did you stumble upon the story of the ship?
After I wrote my first novel, Between Shades of Gray, which is the story of a Lithuanian family that's deported to Siberia, my father's cousin was visiting from Europe, and she said, "Ruta, I know you love hidden history." And she said, "I have a story for you." And she told me about the Wilhelm Gustloff, and I was shocked that I had never heard of it. And I asked, you know, how she knew of this story, and she admitted that she had been granted passage on the Wilhelm Gustloff. But the day of the voyage, when her family trekked to the port, they were not able to get on the ship. And the ship departed, and she was not on it, and she was certain that her life was over, and she was standing on the dock crying as the ship sailed away. Well, you know, 48 hours later, another ship came, and she got on that ship, and as a result, she survived. And, you know, that conversation, we discussed that sometimes it's not where you are, it's where you aren't. And my father's cousin said, look, you know, we weren't on the ship, but we can still affect change. We can still talk about it. And yes, it was a German ship, but there were Lithuanians, Latvians, Estonians, and Croatians on board. And, you know, maybe we can give voice to this story. And as a result, something amazing has happened. I've heard from some families that are related to victims and survivors. And so, you know, perhaps we can put together a passenger manifest of some sort to honor those.
I guess that explains that at the very end of the book, you issue an appeal that we not forget this time and these happenings.
Yes, I think hidden history is important. And when I was doing research, I found in museums messages in bottles, and people had written their story down and tossed it into the sea. And this told me that these souls were desperate for someone to know that they existed, to know their story. And so I imagine, you know, with the Gustloff, there's over 9,000 bottles floating in the sea. And yes, some stories are evil stories, you know, Nazi stories. Let's not forget that all four captains of the Wilhelm Gustloff survived when 9,300 people perished. You know, but I think there are other stories there that deserve to be told.
One of the things that kind of surprised me, Ruta, about the book is the genre. It's a young reader genre, and I'm not even sure I understand what that is, because this seemed like a very adult novel, if you will, to me, written for adults.
Well, to categorize a novel as young adult, the protagonists are generally teenagers themselves, and that is what puts it in that category. However, I do consider myself an author of young adult fiction, and here is why. Because I have a theory that young readers are deep thinkers and deep feelers, and books we read when we're 14, 15, 16, they have an ability to make a profound impression on us, and we carry that impression with us for the rest of our lives. I still remember reading The Diary of Anne Frank and how I felt after I read it. And young people have a tremendous sense of justice. They also perceive and interpret story with an incredible sense of emotional truth. And that emotional purity is so important. I find that adults, you know, we are just so busy, or perhaps we're jaded, but young readers are really honest. And you know, authors and readers, it's a partnership. The author creates the text, but it's really the reader who creates the character and the setting, and, you know, brings the emotions to life. And I really want to be in partnership with these young readers, because they are the futures. They are the lamplighters of hope and knowledge and inspiration. And I want these hidden parts of history to be part of their collective consciousness as they get older.
But primarily the genre is determined by the age of the characters, not necessarily by the age of the readers.
Correct.
Right. How do you market to this younger group?
Well, in order to reach the young readers, especially with historical fiction, which I sometimes joke is the ugly girl at the dance, you know, it's not paranormal, or it's not a thriller, it's historical fiction. Teachers and librarians are my heroes, because, you know, I don't think any teen is going to go running into their library saying, quick, I need a book about the refugee exodus through East Prussia in 1945. But teachers and librarians, they make these topics exciting for the students. And my books now are on the reading lists in over 25 states. And my books have been used for several all-school reads and all-city reads. And so it's truly the teachers and librarians who are my heroes in this.
Are young people reading today? It seems to me that the attention span is gone down.
They absolutely are reading. But I also think, you know, we need to make it exciting for them. And we know that through that although sometimes history can be boring through characters and story, we can put a face to the forgotten and suddenly history becomes human. And yes, I think that we need to make books exciting enough for young readers that they do feel compelled to pick them up. They certainly have so many other options for entertainment.
Yeah, that's the point that I was trying to make. It's not that they aren't learning things. It's the way they're learning things and the sources they have for that learning.
Exactly.
Yeah. How did this book, if it did at all, how did it or might it have changed you?
Well, it changed me in realizing the power of story. That knowledge of story, it helps families, it helps companies, classrooms, and countries function better. If we don't know each other's story, we are constantly misjudging one another. For example, some of these people who were involved in the evacuation and in the bombings and in the war, they've told me that 4th of July is a bit traumatic for them, that when, you know, the fireworks go off, that it triggers, you know, an emotional trauma that reminds them of the war. But because they haven't shared their story, their neighbors have said, oh, you're so unpatriotic. Who doesn't like 4th of July? And I've learned that how can we expect people to understand us or understand our desires and dreams if they don't know our story? And so in turn, how can someone understand, let's say, the agenda of the country of Lithuania if they don't realize that Lithuania was Soviet occupied for 50 years? And certainly now they want to be energy independent. They don't want to buy their energy from the country that occupied them. But if you don't know their story, you don't understand why these initiatives are important. So what the book really has taught me is the power of story and how important it is to share our story.
Well, Salt of the Sea is a story very well told, Ruta. Congratulations to you once again on a book. I found it a most enjoyable read, and I'm sure most people will as well. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. An author has nothing without readers.
Ruta Sepetys, author of Salt to the Sea. She'll be appearing at the St. Charles County Library on Kiska Road tonight at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the top news stories of the week in our Behind the Headlines segment. We'll also talk about Valentine's weekend performances by the St. Louis Chamber Chorus and St. Louis Ballet. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.